The idea of improvisation is by no means new, although people going to concerts these days might think it something of an exotic attraction. But improvisation has been with us as long as there's been music, hasn't there?
It really has. I mean, for hundreds and hundreds, or even millennia, human beings have improvised music. And then, I guess in the 9th century, the monks had the idea of writing down Gregorian chants so that they could sing a chant and repeat it again with the notes in the same order. And since then, in Western music, there has been composition in the last 12 centuries. But improvisation, as you say, is considerably older than composition as an art form.
Is improvisation something that can be taught?
I think it's a gift. I think that it's something to do with the hard wiring in the brain, probably. And most people who can improvise have usually done so since they were quite little. Actually, before the age of 10, I went through about 4 different piano teachers because my teachers just couldn't stand it that I wouldn't practice the pieces properly and practice my scales, that I would just sit at the keyboard and make sound and explore the keyboard, exploring the different sonorities. And I think even at that stage, you're sort of practicing this link between your ear and what's happening at the end of your fingers. It needs to be a very fast link indeed.
Some of the finest composed scores have, in their formal origins or sometimes in their actual print versions, the notion of improvisation. I mean, the Toccata, for instance, a touch piece where the organist explores the instrument, finds out what works under his fingers. Does that what goes through your mind when you sit at a console such as here at Luther College? Is every organist's performance, even if they have music in front of them, in a way, in improvisation?
Well, I think at best it is, in a way. The standpoint that I take is that I think it's very important to know all about performance practice, if you like, to know the sort of fingerings they used in the Baroque and the sort of articulations that were just commonplace, in a sense, 300 or 400 years ago. But for the performance aspect of music, I think it's very important that you're always playing for a contemporary audience and playing at that moment in time. So in a sense, you're recreating what's on the score. And with Baroque music, I mean, if you go to Germany and see these great Baroque churches like at Otterburn and Weingarten, they have this colossal structure on the outside and it's very plain and very strong. But then you go in through the west doors and you see this absolute riot of colour and gold and white and blue and just stunning paintings. And I think Baroque music should be a little bit like that. So you've got this huge structure and this sort of unmovable tactus or pulse that runs through the music. But in a way, growing out of that, it should be flamboyant. And we know from reading all about the way Bach played, for instance, that he very rarely played exactly what was on the written page.
Why don't we do what frustrated your teachers and take a few sounds on this instrument?
Right.
Let's use the principal 8-foot, which is what you would see if you looked at the case.
Yes. But of course, when I was growing up, it wouldn't just be the principal 8-foot. It would be as many stops as possible.
But you've matured now. And
well, that's a matter of opinion, Michael. But on the principal 8-foot, well, I suppose, I mean, I've always been really interested in the way that notes relate to each other. And in other words, exploring harmonies. So the sort of things that I used to do was just put a note down, say, a single note on the feet, say, a bottom C. Although when I was young, my feet couldn't reach, but I used to sit right on the edge of the bench and go like that. And then probably pull out a 16-foot or two to make the floorboards rattle. And then I'd just play some sort of like dominant seventh chords above that. You know, just exploring sounds that are not entirely diatonic in a way. And then when I was a little choir boy, then we used to sing a lot of Stanford and a lot of Parry and a lot of Charles Wood and things like that. So I used to improvise at home on the piano in the style of Charles Wood, you know, with lots of sort of that kind of thing. And then a little bit later, when I went to study with Jean Langlais in Paris, he taught me a lot about modal harmony and the sort of harmonies that Debussy was using at the beginning of the 20th century. And so for a while I used to improvise very light Jean Langlais. He was very big into Gregorian chant, so there'd be a lot of something like that. And then after studying with Langlais, I spent about 11 years transcribing the improvisations of Cochereau.
Cochereau being Pierre Cochereau, who was organist at Notre Dame Cathedral from the mid-50s till his death in, 1981, something like that?
Yeah, he played his first Mass in Notre Dame on the 9th of January, 1955. And then he played his last Mass on the 4th of March, 1984, and died 36 hours after that. But he was really one of the greatest Parisian improvisers of the 20th century.
A hard guy to beat, let alone to match. Yeah. So do you think that you're sort of getting a leg up on Cochereau by doing transcriptions first of his own improvisations and then having absorbed that style, you take off from where he left off?
I think so. I mean, I've just really loved his style ever since I was very young, since I was a choir boy. And I remember the organist at Birmingham Cathedral in England gave me an LP of Cochereau improvising on Alouette, which dates from 1970, I think. And as a 10-year-old, I was totally obsessed by this extraordinary improviser. I suppose I was in something like my mid-20s, and I thought it would be neat to just try transcribing some of these improvisations, rather like Durufle did for Tournemire and Louis Vierne as well, really with the purpose of just sharpening up my ear. And I had no idea when I started that this is going to be a sort of labor of love that lasted 11 years. But I guess the benefit of doing that is that I really got inside his harmonic style, particularly. I would say what I do is not exactly an emulation of Cochereau. It's not a direct imitation or something like that, but it's a sort of fusion of various other things that I love, like from the post-romantic sound world. I mean, I'm very, very much in love with Mahler symphonies and Strauss symphonic tone poems and so on. So it all depends.
The challenge of improvisation for the audience is that unless they know the tune, they have no idea what's going on.
Right.
Let's take that tune, Alouette, Alouette,
yeah.
And why don't you start off a few different verses as you might in a concert. Let's not take it all the way to its height, but just show us how you would vary that very simple theme.
Well, first of all, you would announce it just very plainly and fairly simple harmonies. So something like. Something like that, something maybe with a little bit of a modal twist. A bit like cooking with just a hint of garlic, if you like. And then, so you'd finish off your main theme. And then, of course, the great thing about improvising is that you really can structure it exactly how you want, particularly in variations. So it's good to take the audience by surprise. So you could do something like this as variation one. And you, at least then you can be sure that nobody's like asleep. And then you constantly change the ambience. So you could have a slow movement. So you get the left hand providing the harmonic ostinato, if you like, and the right hand with the theme, and then the pedal also with the theme, but one measure behind. And rumor has it in Paris you can get a special type of spectacle whereby one lens is slightly pointing to the right and the other is pointing to the left. So you just look straight, and then what you see is actually, it does the canon for you. It's pretty good, isn't it? No, I'm kidding. So after a slow movement, you might do something on, say, the foundations in a sort of Wagnerian, chromatic and rich sort of sound. Time playing the whole theme, but you're using cells from it in a way and sequentially. But I think it was Jean Langlais who said that if there's no reference to the theme for 10 seconds, then you'll completely lose your audience.
The rich sounds are fun, but also the bright and spitting stuff, yeah. The sparkle, the fountain of youth, so to speak.
Yeah, the fountain of youth. Something with a more bright and maybe humorous aspect, something like... And then I like to improvise contrapuntal pieces as well, like fugatos. Etc. And then to finish, usually some sort of toccata or something quite showy. Yep.
Think any of those first four teachers of yours who were so upset by the fact that you wouldn't play what was in front of you and were fooling around too much, uh-huh, are happy now to realize that that fooling has turned into a professional direction?
Maybe. I hope so. I mean, I think as I sort of grow as a player, if you like, or grow as a musician, I mean, increasingly I really do what I want to, you know, with some knowledge, of course, of the historic performance and so on. But I really just do what I think that if I was in the audience, then I do what I think would please me the most.
Despite what your teachers might have hoped for you in those early days when they were so upset, this is something that we ought to encourage young musicians to try at home.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah. I think it's important to give young pianists and young violinists, young bassoonists, all instrumentalists really, just the freedom to be able to, the permission, if you like, to be able to improvise, even if it's just for 5 or 10 minutes every day, so that they find a kind of flexibility and an informal friendship with the keyboard. Because when you're playing in public, the most important thing to do is to make friends with a keyboard, and I think one of the most effective ways to do that is through improvisation.
David Briggs, you are a remarkable fellow, and I thank you for your time with me today.
You're so welcome. Thank you.